This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. NPR listeners know Paula Poundstone as a regular panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She's also the host of the podcast Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone and the author of two books, the most recent one being The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Happiness. For 40 years, she has performed stand-up comedy. An Evening with Paula Poundstone will be presented on Thursday, April 11th at the Tibbetts Opera House in Coldwater. Paula Poundstone, thank you for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you did comedy for a long time before Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me came along. Has that changed your approach at all to when you do stand-up?
No, I don't think so. It's my audience now, has a strong fraction of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me listeners in it when I just worked the road. And many of them had no idea that I was a stand-up comic and can't really figure out why I'm not answering questions about the week's news. Yeah, so in that way, it's certainly improved my experience, but it hasn't changed how I do the job.
Would you say that your act is quite different from what you do on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me? I'm wondering, does politics get into your show at all?
Oh, yeah. Only because I don't edit myself very well. And these days, it's hard not to think about, what's going on. We're all soaking in it, as Madge used to say on the Palmolive commercials. But we really are. And it's important. That's the other thing. It's not the sole thrust of what I do. And I'm not a political analyst. And I'm not a historian. And, I'm barely hanging on with what the Electoral College even means. What I do in my act, which is largely autobiographical, is, I talk about things that occur to me as I experience them. And, I remember, particularly when my kids were growing up, there were times I barely ever mentioned the news because I wasn't thinking about it very much because I was steeped in the challenges of, kids' homework and what instrument they were playing and their gymnastics and their physical therapy and the huda and the hada. But now I'm more immersed in it than I once was.
If we set aside for the moment here the question of whether or not the Trump presidency has been good for the country, has it been good for comedians? Has it given you a lot of material and a lot of things to satirize?
Let me use this analogy, if I may. I used to drive a 65 Mustang, not in 1965, but rather in the early 80s, and I loved that car. And it was very beautiful. I knew nothing about its inner workings, and therefore everybody that possibly could ripped me off on that car. And I was on the side of the road. The car was in the shop over 40 times in 8 months. Every penny that I had went into that car. And one day I came home from yet another experience of crying on the side of the road while waiting for, AAA or somebody to come rescue me, and paying every penny I had into the car yet again. And my roommate at the time said to me, "Well, it's good for your material." And I just blew up. I said, "You know what? I'll make stuff up if I have to. My life doesn't have to suck in order for me to think of funny things." And I would use that to address your question about whether or not Trump is good for comedy.
You would find lots of other things to do comedy about if somebody else were president.
We needn't worry about a shortage of comedy. So nobody feel that they must be a criminal in order to make sure that we have plenty to laugh at. Please don't sacrifice yourself in that way for the greater good. I don't think there's a relationship between those two things. You know, it's funny, I remember 1,000 years ago when Clinton was first elected, literally a news crew came to my house, a local news crew came to my house because they wanted to ask me if I thought Clinton was going to be good for comedy. And I was so incensed by that question because I was just like, you know what? How about we give the little fella a try? I felt the same in this case, too. It's better for everybody if it's going well. But it was just so funny to me that was local news coverage's interest at that. Oh, is this going to be funny? I don't care. My favorite part of the night when I'm on stage has mostly to do with just the people in the room. I talk to the audience. I do the time-honored, where are you from, what do you do for a living? And in this way, little biographies of audience members emerge, and I use that from which to set my sails. I was just in Sellersville, Pennsylvania, and there's a woman in the front row who told me, I asked her if she had kids. She said, yes. I said, how old? She said, well, they're twins. And she said, 31 and. She hesitated. She said, 31 and. I said, well, ma'am, then they're not twins.
Right.
Then there were 31 and 32. I spent the rest of the night just delighting in the conversation about how she had laid there on the table for a solid year waiting for her second twin to be born. Yeah, that's not a twin.
No, as a father of 13-year-old twins, they're both 13, I can tell you that. They're not 13
yeah,
and 14 or 13
works.
And 12.
I'm
that's
not
how
sure
it
the
works.
Woman understood the word twin. And I'm going to guess that she kept trying to dress them in the same outfit, and it fit rather snugly on the 32-year-old twin as opposed to the 31-year-old twin. So much of the fun of the night, it's just found within that room. I mean, part of it, what's great about it is, I don't know, you do have this feeling to some degree that you've left all the rest behind for a little while.
Did you set out to develop a certain style of comedy? Did you say there's a certain type of thing I want to do that distinguishes me? Or was it simply a matter of, this is what I think is funny, so I'm going to go out and say it?
Yeah, I don't have the self-discipline to create anything. I think I tried in the beginning to be more sort of, to be only material driven, to have, you know, to have everything be, you know, scripted is a strong word, but, you know, everything to be, you know, material that I had written and memorized, I guess it would be a script. And I failed at that from the get-go. It took me, I don't know, at least a year, maybe a little bit more, to embrace that failure, to say to myself, you know what? It turns out that the real fun is in sort of sticking and moving. And I have tons of material. I have 40 years of material rattling around somewhere in my head. But just, you know, doing what comes to me in the moment, probably, I don't know, on a good night, and I like to think some are, probably a third of the show is unique only to that audience and won't be repeated again. And then there's the part that is, you know, it's material, but I'm not going to do the same material the next night because I was just doing it because I thought of it, because something that sort of, tripped the rat trap, and I mean the board game, you know. And then there's, you know, some stuff that I kind of have sort of a skeleton of that I might go with, for a season or two.
Are there moments when something just happens spontaneously, improvisationally, and it's so good in the moment that you realize somehow I've got to make sure I remember that and I got to do it again the next night or the next time I perform?
It almost never works that way, you know? It's just there's too many stars to line up. And the effort that would have taken, you know, it's funny. The last job I did was Sellersville, Pennsylvania. That was Saturday night. And I usually do a meet and greet afterwards, not always, but often. And I did on that night. And, you know, audience members came up to me, and there's a couple of people were asking me if it was set up, if that lady up front was a plant. And there wasn't just that one lady. There was a number of people that I talked to and had conversation with that night from stage. And I assured that woman that that just required the E word, which is effort. And I put effort into all sorts of things. But, you know, the harder you – for me anyways, and I'm sure there are comics that do it brilliantly in that way. But for me, like, the more I struggle to make something fit – the more it doesn't.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Comedian Paula Poundstone is a regular panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. She's also an author and host of the podcast Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. She will perform stand-up comedy Thursday, April 11th at Tibbetts Opera House in Coldwater. You have a podcast now, which is...
I do! Yeah, it's, you know why I have a podcast? Because it's a very human thing. At this point in the world, human beings, what we have in common is that we breathe oxygen, we don't eat our young, and we have a podcast.
Which is called Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, which isn't true. I mean, people do listen to you, don't they?
Oh, I don't know. You know, actually, one of the things that I am loving about this experience is that many of our listeners now refer to themselves as the nobodies, which was not my original intention. I think of the nobodies as somebody. But I am charmed by that. So yeah, it's me and my partner Adam Felber, and it's a comedy podcast. I'm absolutely terrible at describing it, and yet it's not like it defies description. I have offered, by the way, on the I believe it's on the Facebook page of the, which I only have so that Vladimir Putin will be a listener, on the Facebook page of Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, we are offering, we have a contest for someone to come up with a brief but enticing description and accurate of the show, and the winner will receive a fresh hotel soap. I'm not very good at describing it, but it's a comedy show. We have a couple of guests on every week who have some sort of information that applies to life. Plumbers, and let me think. Who do we just have? We had somebody talk about patents. Why you need a patent? What is a patent? We had a lawyer to talk about the rules of. What do they call those scooters? We had a memory expert, a professor of the, like a brain professor, to talk about memory. And by the way, the answer isn't really all that uplifting. I kept saying to the guy, I heard if you ate blueberries, it helped. And he said, not unless you ate like a whole field of blueberries. Damn it. He said walking, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Was the best way to preserve your memory and maybe even, regrow it.
Yeah.
To enlarge the hippocampus. I was hoping that you could get on the hippocampus just by bribery, like you can all the campuses now. But no, it turns out you have to walk. Damn it.
So, I mean, a podcast, like you say, lots of people have podcasts. You're pretty active as well on social media. Your Twitter feed's updated pretty regularly. Do you think that for someone who's just getting into comedy, some of these things that anybody can do, social media and a podcast, that it might help them get their name and their comedy out there to be heard in a way that maybe was a little tougher when you were starting?
Yes, I don't know. I mean, it depends what you want to do. You want to be a stand-up comic, what you got to do is go do stand-up comedy. Open mic nights is the school of stand-up comedy. And by the way, there is no such thing as stand-up comedy school. People have tried to do that. I think that's just silly because the job is the relationship with the audience, and you can't really pretend that in like a classroom setting. So, yeah, that's the way to do stand-up comedy. If one simply wants to get famous, there's a million ways to do that. Many of them are illegal. you have to be clear with yourself about what it is that you want. I used to say, this is a long time ago, before social media, there were, when we would work clubs, there'd be like the MC and the middle act and the headliner, and every MC was desperate to be a middle act, and every middle act was desperate to be a headliner. And sometimes when I was a headliner, some MC would come up to me and say, can you tell the owner that, I'd make a good middle act or something? And I'd say to him, you're out of your mind. I'd say, you know what? Be the best MC you could possibly be. And then, nobody's doing you a favor, right? Just be fantastic at what you do. Put all that energy into being fantastic at what you do. And guess what? You'll get tons of jobs. And I used to have to tell myself that, too. You know, because the thing that I enjoy more than anything else, I mean, I'm grateful to be able to pay my rent. I really, really, really am. But the thing that I enjoy more than anything else is thinking of things that I think are funny and telling them to people. And so long as I get to do that, I don't really care if I'm famous or not anymore. I did when I was younger care a lot about that, by the way. But after a while, you just go, man, I got the greatest job in the entire world. I am a proud member of the endorphin production industry. And, with Twitter, I post things on Twitter all the time. I'm not sure it's the best use of my time, but I think of things that I think are funny, and I type them into that machine. And when someone else thinks it's funny, it delights me.
So your tour takes you to cities of all sizes. Is there any difference in doing a show when you're in Coldwater, Michigan, as opposed to, say, Seattle, Denver, some of the big cities you're going to hit?
None, zero. No, not at all. If you're referring to the size of the town, absolutely zero. If you're referring to the, the redness or blueness of the area, I would say, minimally, because, we all travel, we all mix it up, and B, I'm not in a club, I'm in a theater. The people who come to see me came deliberately to see me. So they're either coming to see me because they've seen me before and they know they enjoyed it, or because somebody, that knows them said to them, oh, I think you'll like her, or because somebody else brought them. And so we're pretty in sync already. It's like having a party at your house, you have some, even if, people, you say, oh, sure, bring a guest, or, you might meet some new people that night, too. The more the merrier, it's great. But basically, you weren't inviting people of, like, terribly unlike minds, besides which we all have far more in common than we have differences.
But so you mentioned red and blue areas there. So if you're in a real conservative area of the country,
I have the best time.
Yeah, it's still going to be your fans who show up.
Because it's like when the Munchkins come out in Wizard of Oz. Because I don't care how red the area or how blue the area, there's someone of the, of the other political mind there in that community. And so when I work a place that's very, very Republican or very right wing, and by the way, I don't think I'm loathed by all Republicans necessarily, but if I'm in a place that's extremely right wing, what happens is, the people that, don't usually get to say very much about their political leanings come out to see me, and they have a great time because they get to be with one another for a little while. I do have, Republican fans as well. In fact, a lady came up to me the other night. She was so funny. She said after the show, she stood in the line to talk to me. And she kind of drew near to me and whispered. She actually said, I want you to know I'm a Republican. I said, can I give you a hug? I was so grateful that she came. She said, we had a really good time. Because she doesn't have to vote like me. It doesn't matter. We're not voting. We are laughing, generally speaking, at things that we have in common. If I say, a couple of things that aren't exactly like how your life is or exactly what your opinion is, well, welcome to the world. But we do have so much more in common than we have differences. And it's just plain fun to laugh. The idea that I'm going to find out the political leaning of every, of the maker of every product that I use, or of the writers of every show that I enjoy, or of the singer of every song that I like, is absurd.
Paula Poundstone is a comedian, a regular panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and host of the podcast Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Thank you very much for your time.
It was great talking with you. Thank you.
An Evening with Paula Poundstone is coming up Thursday, April 11th at the Tibbetts Opera House in Coldwater. Links with more details can be found at WMUK.org. You can subscribe to WMUK's West Southwest podcast through Apple iTunes and by searching podcasts in Google Music. There you can leave a rating and write a review. The podcast can also be found at our website and through the WMUK app. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.